via medium wave, short wave, and satellite. This is the Dutch International Service.
And now, another half hour of roughly six sets of five-minute media features divided by promos and music bits. Oh, but there's no commercials. Media Network, the weekly communications magazine with Diana Janssen and Jonathan Marks.
Hello and welcome to half an hour of developments from the world of broadcasting.
This time with more news you can use very shortly from the European DX Council conference in northern Denmark.
But we start by looking back, and I hope you were listening last Saturday to our Sounds Interesting program, or maybe you caught the summarized repeat yesterday concerning our transmissions from the Dutch Broadcasting Museum on the south side of Hilversum.
We had at least one listener.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Steve Bauer in Santa Barbara, California, USA. Just wanted to say I caught your special program, Sounds Interesting, tonight. Wasn't aware that I could hear the Pacific service on 9720, I guess it was. Just got off the air, and 2 hours earlier I was hearing you on 9700. Great show. Great portrayal or discussion of ham radio as to what's happening, and I also really enjoyed the discussion of the transmitter company. I didn't realize that's quite the way things were in Holland. It's an interesting concept, having a company provide transmission services as opposed to in this country where we broadcaster just goes out and buys a transmitter from a vendor. Great show. Keep up the good work.
Thanks for the call. As part of celebrations connected with 100 years since Marconi's first use of the radio medium, we set up three ham radio stations, one of which was on shortwave. And we also broadcast live from the museum with some of the background as to what was on show.
We got around 150 electronic mail messages after the close of the transmissions, although it was quite clear that reception of the special ham radio station BA6RNW was difficult, if not impossible, in distant target areas like the Pacific. No doubt written mail is in the post if you qualify for one of the special QSL cards.
Nevertheless, around 13 hours on Saturday, we managed to contact Ben Witvliet, the technical manager at Radio Netherlands Madagascar relay station. They'd been granted a special call sign as well.
5R8 Delta Sierra, Papa Alpha 6 Radio November Whiskey. Good afternoon, Ben. You're 5x7 in Hilversum, Holland. Back to Madagascar. 5R8 Delta Sierra, Papa Alpha 6 Radio Norway Whiskey. Go ahead.
Papa Alpha 6 Radio November Whiskey. Pay attention, Romeo November Whiskey. Here it is. Romeo 8.
And the conversation continued in Dutch.
In fact, there was a pileup because some amateur radio stations heard Madagascar for the first time and started calling Ben Witvliet. Never mind our team in Hilversum, still.
The conclusion of the 5 Live broadcast is that we should do this more often, and plans are currently being made to turn the PA6RNW station into a permanent ham radio station within our broadcasting house here in Hilversum. That way we can also put up a more efficient beam antenna, which clearly makes a difference during these days of very low sunspot activity.
Thanks anyway to everyone who took part. Now, another jingle.
Sky Radio, CD News, Sky Radio.
We played that for a purpose. Diana, you've spent quite a lot of time recently looking at the Dutch domestic broadcasting scene as part of our analysis of new media. Anything to report?
Yes, well, I think there is a significant development that may swing the interest of the Dutch public more towards FM in the future. You may remember that before the Dutch government awarded official AM and FM licenses to commercial broadcasters, they allowed some broadcasters, like Sky Radio, to operate with a temporary license. In a very short period, the continuous music operation Sky Radio built up a loyal audience.
About 12%, I seem to recall. Yes, a delegate to the EDXE conference 10 days ago explained to me that the mix of music, with very little speech, even made Sky Radio popular in Denmark at one time. Curious to hear Dutch domestic news in a Danish cafe, but still.
Yeah, I can imagine. Sky Radio and another music station, Radio 538, were angry when the Dutch government failed to award them licenses at the start of last year. So angry, in fact, that they took their claim to court. Now, before this summer is over, Sky Radio and Radio 538 will get FM licenses after all. In the case of Sky Radio, they will get the 10 kilowatt transmitter on 100.7 MHz, which has been taken away from Radio Utrecht. That transmitter covers most of the central part of the Netherlands and gives Sky Radio a de facto national license, excluding the northern and southernmost parts of the country. No decision has been taken on whether the power will be boosted later this year to, say, 50 or 100 kilowatts. Radio Utrecht will move to 100.1 MHz and thus the national news network Radio 1 will disappear from FM in that part of the country. It's a similar story in Lelystad, that's on the Flevopolder. Radio 538 is being granted the 50 kilowatt transmitter currently being used by Radio 1 on exactly 103 MHz to serve at least Amsterdam and the surrounding areas.
So for some people, they'll have to listen to Radio 1 on 747 kHz medium wave, which is being retained for use by the public broadcasters here. But when's all this going to start?
Yeah, we phoned around, but no one seems to be sure when exactly all this will start. But at the earliest, it will be from the middle of July.
But there must have been some opposition to this latest move.
Yeah, you can say that. The regional station, Radio Utrecht, is annoyed at losing its channel and has mounted a campaign. But Sky Radio's main competitor, Radio 10 Gold, which is on 675 kHz medium wave, is just as angry. 18 months ago, they were delighted to be awarded a 120 kilowatt medium wave channel, which reaches well over the Dutch border into Germany and Belgium.
Even further, in fact.
Yes, I noted that an enthusiastic group of medium wave listeners in Canada even logged it during a de-expedition. But now Jeroen Soer, director of the Arcade Media Group, which owns Radio 10 Gold, says he has six legal actions in the pipeline to try and stop the new licenses.
But wait, there's even more, isn't there?
Sure there is. The Holland Media Group, owners of the medium wave station Hit Radio 1224 from the former pirate ship moored in Lake IJssel, or IJsselmeer, as we say in Holland, are complaining too. Veronica Radio will go commercial in September. Yet both their new radio stations, Hit Radio Veronica on 1224 and the 24-hour news station, which has yet to start on 1395 kHz, are medium-wave channels. Hit Radio 1224 currently only has a market share of 0.7%, which contrasts rather sharply with the 23% share enjoyed by the national public network Radio 3. Veronica will have to spend a lot of money persuading the public to tune to music on medium wave. Remember, most of the real Veronica DJs from the offshore days are working for Radio 538.
So the Veronica Broadcasting Organisation must be pinning their hopes on television.
I think so. They will be on an Astra transponder as from September for the television service. Maybe the profits will be used to subsidise the radio. On the other hand, Radio 10 Gold is probably concerned because, until now, their medium-wave Golden Oldies format has been making a profit, and some of that has been used to finance a satellite TV project. That is not doing at all well, at least for the moment, partly due to cable distribution problems, and extra competition from Sky Radio cannot be welcome.
There are also tough times ahead for many public international broadcasting stations. Stay with us.
Radio Netherlands. We're sort of MTV without all that music, commercials, and those annoying videos.
Three stories to pass on. Radio Canada International's Alan Vermilion told Media Network this week they're still waiting to find out if new budget cuts will affect their operation. The fact that they weren't announced at the same time that 1,000 jobs were lost with the CBC domestic service at the end of May is no guarantee that things won't happen at RCI later on in 1995. But we keep our fingers crossed. In the Pacific, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's overseas satellite television service, Australia Television, is in serious financial trouble. The board of the ABC is currently discussing what to do with the service and, in particular, how they can continue funding it. Australia Television was launched using the Palapa B2P satellite 3 years ago, with a one-off seeding grant of $5.4 million Australian dollars. When the government donated this grant for the service, it was on the understanding that Australian television would be self-financing. Last year, the Australian Minister for Communications, Michael Lee, ordered a review of Australian television finances, as it was rumoured at the time that the ABC was diverting resources from its free-to-air services. Conceding the service was not paying its way, the then ABC Managing Director, David Hill, stated that the ailing service would receive an internal line of credit. He blamed the minister's review and the later Senate inquiry for scaring away potential corporate investors. It's believed Australia Television has now accumulated a loss of around $8 million. It lost nearly $3 million last year and is expected to lose between $4 and $5 million this financial year. While the ABC board discusses the problem, the former managing director of the ABC, David Hill, told listeners to ABC Radio exactly what he would like the ABC and the government to do.
Radio Australia does a magnificent job. Always has. It's the best international radio in the world. So is Australia Television, the best international television. But the reality is we spend a total of $30 million a year on Radio Australia and only $6 million on Australia Television. Radio Australia is a bit of a sacred cow. When we launched Australia Television, the government said that we could not amalgamate the two operations financially for the first 3 years. That 3 years is now up. The logical thing to do is put them together. They're both international broadcasters. Shortwave radio, it's not the fault of Radio Australia, is plummeting. It used to have tens of millions of listeners. My guess is now outside of China and Indonesia and to a limited extent Vietnam, there are very few people listening to Radio Australia, yet we continue to pour $30 million a year into it. At the same time, we've seen a huge surge in ownership and usage of television, and what we should be seeing is a switch in resources from radio to television. And I might add, this has been happening anyway, because Radio Australia is a critical part of the television news on Australia Television. They do five foreign language broadcasts of news each day with English subtitles.
Unfortunately, our research can't confirm David Hill's budget figure of $30 million for Radio Australia. In fact, Radio Australia only gets $15 million from the government to make programmes. The transmitters are run by the National Transmission Agency, which receives a separate budget of another $15 million to run them. They, in turn, contract Telecom Australia to operate the transmitters. Rod Tiffin is Professor of Government at Sydney University and believes this is a rather complicated way of broadcasting.
So what we have is a triangular relationship, which is a wonderful recipe for irresponsibility and stagnation, and where the only organisation that has any interest in what happens completely lacks power in the relationship. I should point out that the Department of Communications and more latterly the National Transmission Authority, under their stewardship, Radio Australia's transmission has lagged very badly, so that we are now in many key target regions no longer competitive with either the BBC or Voice of America. Australian Television International, as it then was, began with a very small grant. In fact, it was phrased as a loan from the government. In fact, the federal government gave less money to Australia Television than it gave to the Northern Ireland peace process, which is a rather strange judgment of national interests and national priorities. Yet we've had all sorts of ministers, all sorts of official statements by the government saying how important both Australia Television and Radio Australia are in projecting Australia to the region. And what we have is a complete disproportion, a complete contradiction between their rhetoric and their willingness to commit resources to the task. I think it's a disgrace that the federal government is not prepared to give ongoing funds to Australian Television.
It's now widely believed that the ABC will ask the Australian government to set up a review of international broadcasting. Meanwhile, in North America, a review is going on already in Washington, D.C.
This is the Voice of America. The following broadcast is in digital.
Voice of America.
Now, people are certainly counting the cost at the moment. Last week's newspapers had stories insinuating that Voice of America might be switched off by the year 2000. On the line now is VOA director Jeff Cowan. Jeff, what's going on?
Well, the new Republican Congress feels very strongly the need to balance the budget, which in the United States has been way out of whack for a number of years. To do that, they do not plan to cut defense spending, which is a major part of the budget. They don't plan to cut what we call entitlement programs, Social Security. They can't reduce the expenditures on paying for the deficit, which at the moment is in the neighborhood of $4 trillion. So they're looking at a lot of places where they think they can cut, and many of them think that one place they can cut is in international affairs, and they particularly think that they can cut the broadcasting budget and save a few dollars. So we're caught in that debate.
Some people seem to think they could eliminate it altogether, saying that VOA was part of the old Cold War.
Well, that's correct. I mean, I think a lot of people who don't know much about us assume that our function came and went with the Cold War. Of course, Jonathan, you know the history, that we actually started with World War II, and we have functions that go way beyond and the role of the Cold War. And, of course, Radio Netherlands is one of the great institutions that continues to have an important role in the world, and it has nothing to do with the Cold War.
Is part of the problem, though, that VOA does not actually target Americans living abroad, and therefore people don't know you exist?
Well, I think that's true. We actually have a law prohibiting us from distributing the programming inside of this country, and we do not have as a principal function reaching Americans who live abroad, so we don't have the kind of natural constituency that some others would, and we also are not supposed to spend our time, money, or energies lobbying our own Congress. But on top of that, Jonathan, what's happening is this Congress is trying to do so much so quickly. It's been called a revolution, which in the world's terms maybe isn't really a revolution. But they're trying to change so many things so quickly with new members of Congress who have very little experience that they really don't know the function that we perform in the world. And I think part of our problem is educating them to our importance in the world, something that doesn't sort of happen in the natural.
But what stage has it got? I mean, are these just proposals we're talking about, or is this actually going to happen?
It's clear that our budget, in any case, is being reduced. As you know, we have reduced it by 20% over the last couple of years anyway, from 94 to 96. Our position is that that 20% reduction is about all that we ought to be required to sustain. The House authorizing bill would cut us by another 30% by October of 1997, which would essentially mean that we would have been cut by more than 50% over that 3-year period. That would have a very dramatic impact on cutting off our broadcasting to major parts of the world, and probably in at least half of our languages would be eliminated. So I think that if what the House is proposing were to become the law, your listeners wouldn't be able to hear us, and we would no longer be able to broadcast the languages that we do, and we'd no longer have the kind of great worldwide news gathering sources that we have. Hopefully that won't happen, but it could.
Because the Republicans are arguing that CNN's doing an equal job.
Well, I want to be clear that that's what some Republicans are arguing. Other Republicans are arguing that we're extremely important. They know, as you do, that practically nobody who listens to CNN is also a listener to the Voice of America, that our listenership around the world is many, many times that of CNN, and that the kinds of information and news that we broadcast are very much unlike CNN. CNN, of course, is seen by members of Congress when they stay in hotels and they speak English around the world. But most of our listeners don't listen in English, and most of them don't live in hotels.
But meanwhile, what's going on? I mean, are there still proposals in the air to start things like Radio Free Asia, or they've been effectively killed?
No. Interestingly, there was one budget formulation that would have kept Radio and Television Marti, kept Radio Free Asia, and eliminated everything else. It's a period of time where things are very much in flux, Jonathan. And as I say, there are so many new members of Congress who have so many issues in front of them and so little knowledge of international broadcasting, they may not know just what the Voice of America means to people.
So where are we now? I mean, is it a question that there are a few proposals kicking around which look dangerous, or are these going to actually, where will they go next?
We have an authorizing process, which are the bills that permit Congress to actually appropriate or give the money to various enterprises. But so far, there is one step that has taken place, which is that the authorizing part of the House of Representatives, that authorizing bill, has been adopted, and it would cut the Voice of America by about one-third on top of the 20% that we've already been cut.
So is that definitely going to go ahead, or could be vetoed?
First of all, the president could veto that legislation and has said that he would, partly on other grounds, but he has said that he would. And then secondly, whatever happens in the authorizing process in the House, there still is a Senate authorizing process, which so far is not so bad, and then we'll see what happens when the two are reconciled. Right now, Jonathan, I remain hopeful. I remain hopeful that this Congress will learn how important the Voice of America is, and I remain hopeful that we'll wind up with the kind of funding to be able to retain a great worldwide service.
When will you know?
I suppose by October.
Voice of America Director Jeff Cowan on the line from Washington.
Now to the answer line, Hilversum 6724222. Who have we got?
Carl Kruger, Saxmund and Suffolk and East of England. Just ringing you up to ask you, where on earth is Bishkek? Bravo India Sierra Hotel Kilo Echo Kilo. It's a Voice of Russia QSL card.
Well, to help solve that problem, Andy Sennett of the World Radio TV Handbook Editorial Office in Amsterdam joins me now. Andy.
Well, Diana, Bishkek is the capital of Kyrgyzstan, which is a republic in Central Asia, and it's part of the Commonwealth of Independent States, formerly the Soviet Union. And there is indeed a Radio Moscow relay station there. So it's in Central Asia.
Right. Now to some tips, including one we touched on last week.
Well, Diana, I'll start with some medium wave news this time. And last week I received the 1995 handbook from the Commonwealth Broadcasting Association. There are entries for each member country. And in the listing for the Antilles Radio Corporation in Montserrat, I read the following. An additional frequency of 740 kHz, currently not in operation, is soon to be reactivated. Now, some listeners will recall that there was a 20 kilowatt transmitter on 740 kHz prior to the hurricane, which destroyed Radio Antilles back in 1989. But there's no indication of what they'll be using the frequency for.
And there are two new commercial stations in the UK.
There are. One is called Radio Viva, and it's on medium wave 963 kHz, covering the Greater London area. And Steve Witt of Medium Wave News said it started testing on the 5th of June, and it'll start regular programming on the 3rd of July. Incidentally, the programs are going to be aimed at women, and that's all I'm going to say.
Very wise, Andy. And what's the other new station?
It's called Premier Radio, and it's a Christian radio station, but in the widest sense, programming will be similar to other commercial stations, but the content of programs and advertising will reflect Christian values. Premier Radio is also based in London and has two medium wave frequencies, 1305 and 1413 kHz.
Okay, and now some shortwave news.
Yes, a station we don't mention very often is Radio Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia. Andreas Fulk posted the current schedule of the English service on the internet, and it shows broadcasts daily as follows. At 0910 to 0940 UTC to Australia on 9960 and 12,000 kHz, 1445 to 1515 to South Asia on 7290 and 9950 kHz, 19:30 to 20 hours for Europe on 4080 and 12,000 kHz, and 03 to 0330 to North America on 9960 and 12,000 kHz. And I see that Radio Ulaanbaatar now has a fax number. It's country code 976, area code 1, then 323096.
So once again, that's 976-1-323-096. And you've got some more news from Asia.
Yes, the Voice of Vietnam has extended its use of relay transmitters in Russia, and Tom Sundstrom reports a huge signal in New Jersey between 01 and 03 hours UTC on 7250 kHz, 7250, with a half-hour program in English repeated three times. On at least some days, BBC monitoring has noted Spanish instead of English at 0230 UTC.
And Radio Jordan has some new frequencies too.
That's right, Diana. 15170 kHz, 15170, is widely reported in English between 11 and 12 hours UTC, and Tom Sundstrom says reception in the eastern US is very good, and from the timing, I suspect that's the target area. And they're also coming in better here in Europe. Herman Bull and Salvatore Tlaconica report hearing Radio Jordan in English on 15270 kHz, 15270, from 14 hours UTC, with news at 15 hours, apparently replacing 9560 kHz.
Nix, I believe you have the solution to a mystery.
I have, thanks to the bulletin of the Club d'Orncourt de Quebec. The well-known French DXer Bernard Chenal recently visited Sierra Leone and discovered that the Muslim shortwave station, Radio Al-Quran, really does exist. We listed it in some previous editions of WRTH, but took it out because nobody seemed able to confirm it. Well, Bernard discovered that a 250 kilowatt transmitter operates on 9630 kHz, 9630, between 15 and 19 hours UTC, with programs in Arabic, English, French, and seven African languages. The antenna is omnidirectional, which might explain why it's seldom reported outside Africa. I have actually seen a logging of it made last year in Mali. And we also now have an address for the station. Radio Al-Quran, PMB, which stands for Private Mailbag, number 668, Freetown in Sierra Leone.
Right, and what else have you got?
Well, as they say, now for something completely different. Some listeners may have seen the notice in WRTH from Neil Carlton in Canada about using shortwave radio in the classroom as a teaching aid. Well, I'm delighted to say that Neil's project is gathering momentum. I recently received the second issue of his 12-page newsletter called The Shortwave Classroom, with news from teachers around the world. Now, to find out more about this very worthy project, you can write to Neil Carlton, N-E-I-L, Carlton is spelled C-A-R-L-T-O-N, at the Naismith Memorial Public School, Naismith is N-I-S-M-I-T-H, at P.O. Box 280, Almonte, A-L-M-O-N-T-E, Ontario, K0A1A0 in Canada. And you can also contact Neil through the internet. His email address is as167@freenet.carlton.ca.
This is George Wood from Radio Sweden, and if it's Thursday, it must be Media Scan on Radio Netherlands.
That must be Media Network. Media Network jingle, take two.
Hi, this is George Wood from Radio Sweden. If it's Tuesday, it must be Media Network on Radio Netherlands.
No, because it's Thursday.
Okay, give me a guess.
Media Network jingle, take three.
Hi, this is George Wood from Radio Sweden. If it's Thursday, it must be Media Network on Radio Netherlands.
Seriously, though, a couple of World Wide Web pages to tell you about.
George tells me that as part of a test, Radio Sweden's English service pages are now online and you can see pictures of members of staff. Looks fine here in Hilversum. The URL for the program schedule page is http://www.abc.se/tilde-m-for-maria-8914/rsprog.html. And Wolf Herrend of Radio Austria International reports they have a German language World Wide Web page that's just gone up. You need to make a note of the following if you want to try their pages, which also have a news service.
Deep breath.
http://www.apa.co.at/orf/teletext, that's teletext/598.htm.
I wonder if there'll be a way in the future to simplify those addresses. Anyway, we'll post those links on our World Wide Web pages as soon as possible.
I see the line to Melbourne, Australia has come in. Our propagation specialist, Mike Bird, is on the line. Mike, what's the weather like?
Well, it's cold and it's not wet, but it's windy, so it's winter.
And what about the propagation?
Well, Diana, propagation was generally good last week. The disturbance we forecast to take place between Monday and Tuesday didn't eventuate. Solar activity was low all week. The solar flux was 82 at the start of the week. On Friday, it reached its high at 86, and by Tuesday, it had dropped down to 77. The average works out to 82.4, which equals an effective sunspot number of 23, and that is up 10 points on the previous week's level. The geomagnetic field disturbance indicator, the estimated planetary A index, ranged between 10 and 4, which represents unsettled to quiet conditions. As I said before, Diana, not a bad week.
Great. And what about between now and next Thursday, June 22nd?
Well, IPS Radio and Space Services expect solar activity will remain low. The geomagnetic field should be quiet to unsettled until Tuesday, when another coronal hole could produce active conditions. Hopefully on Wednesday it will return to unsettled conditions.
Mike, do we know when the sunspot minimum is expected?
Well, it's supposed to be around between now and the end of the year, but solar cycle 22 is proving to be very different. It rose to its maximum very quickly, but it's coming to its minimum very, very slowly. I think at this stage we'll know more at the end of the year.
Thanks, Mike.
Talking of looking ahead, a week today we'll have news about Liechtenstein.
And strange plans on the Isle of Man.
And we'll be getting ready to pack our suitcases for the Media Network Benelux Roadshow.
We'll take you to Betzdorf, Luxembourg, rapidly turning into the satellite dish capital of Europe.
But in the meantime, from Diana and myself, keep your letters and cards coming our way. But for now,
we wish you a pleasant weekend.
Media Network is a Radio Netherlands presentation. Copyright 1995, all rights reserved.